Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Friends, welcome back to Foul Play. This season, we're bringing you the story of Charles and Jennifer Chaw. This is episode 2, Circumstances. As a reminder, as well as myself and Wendy, throughout this season, you will also hear from retired detective Alan Fox and retired detective Ron Dreher.
I'm Alan Fox. I live in Reno, Nevada, and I'm retired from law enforcement for over 30 years. I've worked robbery homicide for 10 years.
My name is Ron Dreher. I went to work for Reno on March 15, 1973, and then I retired on July 23, 1999.
We have been asked to cover this case by Alan and Ron to see if anyone remembers anything about Charles and Jennifer. Always remember, however insignificant something might seem to you, it may be a vital piece of evidence that helps the police to work out what happened. So if you have any information at all, please do come forward. You can contact Reno Police directly, or if you prefer to stay anonymous, you can contact me, and I will pass on the information for you. This is a very sad case about two young children who went missing in 1989 and whose bodies were not discovered until the following year. This is a murder case that has never been solved. Please note that while we are not including graphic details in this series, we are dealing with children, so this may not be suitable for all listeners.
In episode 1, we heard how Charles and Jennifer Chaw went missing after leaving school on the 18th of October, 1989. How their mother Anne was away in Taiwan and their grandmother was looking after them. In this episode, we will be looking more at the circumstances around their disappearance. Alan took Shane around the area where the children lived and went to school. So during this episode, you will hear some audio from this trip. In our first clip, Shane is in the car with Alan, and Alan is showing him the school that the children attended.
Here is Anderson Elementary School. This is the school they attended. The front of the buildings are pretty much the same. So this is pretty much how it looked back then.
So that morning, a school bus would have picked them up from the apartment, dropped them off here.
And dropped them off here, yeah.
And they did count them for their attendance that day.
So yes.
They were at school.
They talked to the teachers. They were there at the school. Now, the initial reports, which tend to have more credibility than interviews that are done 2 weeks later, indicate that the kids got on the school bus and rode it to their bus stop at their apartment complex. And that's going to be down here. For kids these days, it's quite a distance to walk. But back in the day, you wouldn't have thought anything of seeing anybody walking to and from school any amount of distance.
But they typically rode the bus?
Yes. Yes.
What grade were they?
Jennifer was 6. She would have been in the first grade. And Charles was 8, which would have put him in the 3rd grade.
Ron confirms what Alan said about the bus route and the way the children normally walked, etc.
They get on the school bus every day. It's a routine. They get on and they take the school bus and comes around what's now known as Talbot Lane. The Talbot Lane, and there's a road that comes around where Sam's is and all of the stores now, which didn't exist at that point. The school bus would follow the same route every day, make a right turn going southbound on Talbot, drop the kids off there. All of the kids, they then get off the bus, walk across the street, walk down. This is where it gets confusing. So they either walked on the sidewalk or they walked through the apartment complex, go to their apartment. And so that's what we know. That's the normal routine of the kids. You got that from other people that saw the kids get off the bus. And the initial thing we look at is, for example, were they at school? Did they really get on the bus? All those questions that you ask, just you don't overlook the obvious.
And you mentioned that there were two possible paths the kids could have taken. So are you saying that sometimes they go down one way and sometimes they go down another way?
We don't know, but yes, we're theorizing at that point. There's probably more than two, but the most logical way for the children to go back to their house would have been come down the sidewalk, walk around where the parking lot is, go up that way. Or most kids are going to cut through the apartment complex. They're not going to walk down the sidewalk, but we have to look at both.
Okay. And then what happens next?
That's a good question. We don't know.
Okay.
All we know is that somebody picked up the kids and they left.
And then at some point, they do not make it to their apartment.
They don't make it to the apartment, no. We know that because grandma tells someone that can understand her, most likely Simon Thied, one of the people that worked at the restaurant, that the kids didn't come. So he speaks English. Whether he spoke that dialect, he spoke it enough to be able to report that crime to us or report him missing to us.
As you can hear, there is some confusion over who exactly called the police and how the children's grandmother communicated that they were missing. But the important part is that they were missing. And it was reported to the police around 8 p.m. on the 18th of October 1989. Alan continues his trip with Shane, showing him where the apartment complex is in relation to the school. It's always good, wherever possible, to get a feel of the area if we can.
Okay, up here, this part of the road, it only went so far back here. So where we just came from, that's where this road ended. And then they slowly built it up all the way around. Now here, this is Talbot. This that says Lodge at McCarran. That was the Redfield Apartments. This was Timber Hills Apartments. And the children lived over in these apartments. And we'll drive through a little closer. But the bus would, I believe, would come up this way and stop somewhere right in here, the corner. So the kids would have to cross the street, and I believe they would normally go this way and then back through the apartment complex. They lived on the far corner.
So they'd just be walking across.
Yeah, walking in between apartments. I believe they're still numbered the same. Yeah, so that was the entrance to the apartments. But I had often thought they would have went this way. But see, what doesn't make sense is even in broad daylight, if you walk through here, right when the school bus let out, just somebody should have saw something.
Although right now, there's no one out here. And the way that they built these apartments, this style of apartment is specifically made and designed so that they're secluded.
Yeah.
So that when you're renting one apartment, the next apartment next to you, they're not bothering.
They lived in one of these on the bottom floor, either this one, this side, or the other side. So, yeah, this would have been more direct, actually, that if they would have walked along Redfield, which is that street, and then walked through here. The way we just drove, that seemed like it wouldn't have been as direct. But yeah, they often played at the swimming pool here and with other kids who had parents out. And
point to me again where the school bus let them off at.
Right in front of the apartments on Talbot, right over there.
Right over at Sepsler.
Yeah, and they lived in 73.
It's pretty dense for the complex.
Big shout out to you for making it through the hectic holiday season. This new year, get clean, quality, pregnancy nutrient support off your to-do list, including Ritual's best-selling essential prenatal multivitamin, designed with 12 traceable key ingredients to support a healthy pregnancy. With big changes coming up, take the small steps now and start today with 30% off a 3-month supply at ritual.com/podcast. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Sometimes there's more to a true crime case than meets the eye. The same goes for your mental health. what might seem like repeated overthinking or unwanted disturbing thoughts you are scared to share with anyone could all be signs of something deeper, like OCD or obsessive compulsive disorder. And those habits you rely on to ease anxiety and discomfort, like checking, seeking reassurance, or replaying thoughts, might actually be compulsions. Imagine your brain getting stuck on thoughts you don't want to have, like urges to do something unsettling you'd never actually want to do, or disturbing doubts about something important to you, and constantly feeling like you have to do something, anything, to make these unwanted thoughts go away. But no matter what you do, the relief is only temporary, and eventually, the cycle starts all over again. I know firsthand how this condition can take over your life. I also know how crucial it is to get the right kind of help to break free from the cycle and reclaim your life, which is why I want to tell you about NoCD. OCD is so much more than the stereotypes about liking things clean or organized. It's actually a serious condition that causes people to get stuck in a cycle of stressful unwanted thoughts and repetitive behaviors, which can become debilitating. These unwanted thoughts are called intrusive thoughts. They're usually disturbing or stressful and feel totally out of character. And people with OCD often try to relieve the anxiety from those thoughts with repetitive physical or mental behaviors, which are called compulsions. One of the hardest things about OCD is how misunderstood it is. A lot of people don't realize it's OCD, so they're full of shame and often suffer in silence. Not every therapist understands OCD or is qualified to treat it effectively, which can make it difficult to find the right help. OCD is highly treatable with a specialized type of therapy called ERP, or exposure and response prevention. With NoCD, you can do live virtual ERP therapy with licensed therapists who specialize in ERP and OCD, so they truly understand what you're going through, even the symptoms that feel hard to talk about. NoCD enables over 155 million Americans to access evidence-based treatment at NoCD, covered by insurance. If you or someone you love is struggling with OCD, you're not alone. And with the right care, you can get better. To find out more about therapy with NoCD, go to nocd.com and book a free 15-minute call with their team. That's nocd.com to learn more and book a free call.
Yeah. So how long did you say it was when they went to question the bus driver and the student?
They did that almost the next day. But they didn't get all the students, I believe. I'm still reading, and it wasn't a murder, and I have a feeling that everybody felt like the kids will turn up. It was a mistake, and somebody didn't know they were going to go somewhere else. All the things that tend to screw up cases like this. But keep in mind, this was all pasture land out here. None of that was there.
Really? Just quiet.
Yeah. And this, everything south of here, going that way, it was all pasture ranch land. And now, as you can see, it's just a city.
Just these apartments right here on both sides?
Yeah. And that was just a barbed wire fence to fields and stuff.
Wow. Area really changed then.
Oh, yeah.
So if that's the case, then I'm sure this street wasn't as big. So even the drive there may have taken us long.
Yeah. Yeah. It wasn't. Yeah, there wouldn't have been any lights here. And shortly after, this was all built in, but it wasn't at the time.
It's not 100% clear when exactly the children went missing. Did they actually get the school bus home that day, or did something happen to them outside the school? As many of the witnesses were children, where every school day feels the same, it was very hard to establish if they were actually on the school bus or not. And of course, the bus driver sees many, many children every day. So unless something stuck in his memory, he would struggle to be certain who was on the bus on which days.
By the time they run down the kids who normally rode the school bus and interviewed them, it had been a couple days. Now, keep in mind, when you're asking somebody about something a couple days ago and they're used to a routine and they're used to seeing the kids on the school bus, they're probably going to remember they were on the school bus. I suspect that we'll never know for sure if they got on the school bus until we find who abducted and killed them. And I lean more towards they didn't get on the school bus, that it happened before. between school and the school bus. They interviewed the bus driver. The problem is the time frame. You talk to him that day, you probably get a better, more dependable answer. But nothing could be corroborated in my mind so far that I've read and that I've talked to the investigators if they got on the school bus. I've heard one say they did get on the school bus.
What we do know is that wherever it was that they were abducted, there were likely other people around. Yet nobody saw anything unusual or heard anything unusual. Nobody reported a stranger hanging around the area. Nobody reported any strange vehicles around the area. Though, of course, hiding in plain sight is always possible, if you drive a delivery vehicle or a taxi, for example. However, for these reasons, it is more than likely that Charles and Jennifer knew the person that took them that day. I spoke to Alan about this when I interviewed him.
I think it was somebody who the kids would have went with, and that list is very, very small. Even the child's own father came by the school, and Charles was told by the mom, don't go with your dad if he tries to pick you up, because they were going through a divorce and she had custody. And the dad just did stop by and said, hey, I can give you a ride home, and because he hadn't seen the kids in a while, and they refused to go with him, said no, mom said no. And, you know, he didn't push it or anything. And that was, I think, a little over a year before. So, you know, I think they had no problem saying no to somebody, but not somebody who they normally would ride with.
And also, there was such a small slot of actually being able to get hold of them, and the chances are there were other people around. So,
yeah.
You know, if they kicked up enough of a fuss, somebody would have heard, wouldn't they?
And think about this. It's somebody who everybody's so used to seeing that they didn't even notice them. You know, it's the invisible person. It's, you know.
That's quite unusual as well, isn't it?
Yeah. You know, it's like one time when I was working street crimes and we were watching this person, the local cab company loaned us a cab. And I noticed while I'm driving that and following this person and watching them, you're invisible in a cab. Nobody notices you unless they want to ride, you know. And that was one of the best vehicles I've ever used for surveilling somebody.
Charles and Jennifer are reported missing at 8 p.m. Their mother, Anne, is still in Taiwan. In fact, she is just leaving Taiwan after her two-week trip. And at this point, she doesn't know her children are missing. In fact, she doesn't find out that they are missing until she landed back in the United States.
Mom is in Taiwan. She's actually on her way back. And by the time the investigation started in earnest, she was in transit. She may have called, but they didn't want her to spend all those hours on the plane, so they waited till she landed, and then of course she broke down and has been a mess ever since.
As Alan said in the beginning of this season, he is a retired detective. So why is he involved in this case?
So I found that when I, after retiring, and the more I thought about this case, I thought that it can be solved. I have been talking with the original investigator, Ron Trier, who I'll introduce you to. He's still obsessed about the case. And I met with him about a year and a half ago and said, I think we could do something. I think we'd do a podcast, get it out there, maybe get the energy back. These are two kids trying to generate more interest and stuff. The reason why I'm here with you, Shane, is to do that.
And retired Detective Ron.
I worked on that case from the time I was involved, from July of 1990 through the time I retired, and I still work on the case. You're committed to Anne, and she won't get involved with the podcast, I can tell you that. I asked her before because she doesn't want to do it, but she's very much appreciative of what's going on. What you do, what we're doing, what Alan does, but she doesn't want to get involved in this because she's trying to find peace.
It's painful.
Okay. Yeah. And like I just talked to her a couple of weeks ago. It was a period of time where she didn't want to talk. So I just let her go. And so we've got back together now. So there's information that she has that I want and that Alan needs. And there's things that we need to discuss, but that'll come in time.
These two amazing men, and many others like them, don't just treat the cases that they work as a job. These cases haunt them. They tear away at them. And long after they are retired, they still want to help solve these cases and to bring answers to those families that are left with nothing. We want to end this episode by thinking about Anne, the mother who left the United States for a 2-week trip to Taiwan with everything and came back with nothing. The mother who, over 30 years later, doesn't have answers to what happened to her beautiful children on that day. And maybe, more importantly, why?
This was episode 2 of our series, The Chaw Children. In episode 3, the bodies of Charles and Jennifer are found. If you have any information on Charles and Jennifer Chaw, please contact Reno Police Department. Or if you prefer to remain anonymous, you can contact us through our website, itsfoulplay.com. Thank you for listening.
At Planet Fitness, we're declaring it. This is the year of getting stronger. And future stronger you can get started now by saving $28 or more when you join today. You in? We have all the best-in-class equipment you could ever need to keep stepping it up. And free fitness training to help you mix up your routine. Plus, most clubs are open 24 hours. So let's do this. Join Planet Fitness today and save $28 or more. Just $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends February 28th. See home club for details.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.